Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I have always dreamed of this.
This is Soundcheck at 93.9 WNYC and online at WNYC.org. I'm John Schaefer. Fox's American Idol will finish its fifth season atop the ratings tonight with a classic face-off. Broadway-style belter Catherine McPhee, whom you're hearing in the background, versus the prematurely gray crooner Taylor Hicks. Now, in spite, or perhaps because of, all the overwrought singing and the questionable musical choices, the show has become a national obsession. According to our first guests today, that obsession taps into deeply rooted traditions in American culture. Our guests are Robert Thompson. He's director of Syracuse University's Center for the Study of Popular Television and a noted authority on pop culture. Bob, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you.
Also joining us is Catherine Mizell. She's a PhD candidate in ethnomusicology at the University of California, Santa Barbara, where she is working on a dissertation entitled American Singing, the Mediation of Identity Politics in American Idol. Catherine, welcome to you, too.
Thank you.
Bob, let me begin with you. Talent shows have long been popular, you know, sort of out of proportion to the musical aesthetics that are involved. Why do we have 30, 35 million people tuning in each week to hear music that many of them would say, under other circumstances, isn't that interesting?
That's right. And I think partially is because it is a soap opera, as you said earlier. I mean, I'm not interested in emergency medicine, but I like Grey's Anatomy. I'm not that interested in listening to 20-year-olds sing covers of Whitney Houston and Elton John. At the same time, this is a good old-fashioned kind of Horatio Alger story in fast-forward in one single television season. And it goes back a long way. Burlesque and vaudeville in the 19th century had amateur nights, and Major Bowe's Amateur Hour in the 30s, which was on radio before there was any television, had a 47 rating, which is way higher than American Idol has ever even come close to. And it discovered such talents as, Frank Sinatra,
right,
Beverly Sills, some pretty big people.
Of course, that 47 share, I mean, there was less competition for people's time and attention back
then.
That's
correct. It was a whole different ball game. And I think that's what's been so appealing about American Idol is it, in this multi-channel universe, it's one of the only shows on the air or on cable that's got good old-fashioned network-era broad appeal. You've got 68-year-old grandmothers voting 75 times at the end of each episode, and you've got four.
Now, do you know that for a fact, Bob?
Yeah, there are several in print who have actually come out and fessed up to this. I went to one of the American Idol concerts once, and on the left of me were two mothers with probably about seven fourth graders. And on the right of me was a couple in their probably early 60s who had come alone together.
Hmm.
It really does appeal across the board. And because it's family friendly, I think there really is an appetite for that kind of stuff now. And it's just so hard to pull off that when someone does, it can steamroll over just about all of the competition.
All right. Now, you've mentioned the Major Bowles Amateur Hour and other things going all the way back to vaudeville. You know, the kind of open mic night at the Apollo is not a new idea at all. What about in the 80s, we had shows like Star Search, which was sort of a similar thing. And then there was The Gong Show, which was quite a different thing.
Yeah, and I think this was the stroke of genius of American Idol. It took the old-fashioned notion of a talent search, which Star Search was working in that old tradition, and then it married it with this bizarre, irony-laden new idea, which was what The Gong Show did. You had three judges who were, for the most part, really mean to the people who performed there. After that marriage happened, American Idol, in fact, adds the three judges, and they had done this in the British version before, but at the same time, they take out all the irony. It becomes a good old-fashioned talent contest, but it's got this element of danger with the judges, and that was a 1-2 punch that made American Idol seem to Star Search like modern quantum physics is to Newtonian gravitational theory.
I'm not even going to try and parse what that means, Bob, but okay. We've got all kinds of analogies that we can make, but Bob is turning to advanced physics on the program today. Robert Thompson is director of Syracuse University's Center for the Study of Popular Television. Catherine Mizell at the University of California, Santa Barbara. Catherine, you recently presented a paper at the Experience Music Project in Seattle examining the role of failure in American Idol. How does that play out in our whole image of the American dream?
Well, we kind of have a long history in the U.S. of artists who create success out of some kind of failure, from all the way back to Florence Foster Jenkins during the Depression, to the Shags and Mrs. Miller in the 60s, to outsider music, and of course to artists like William Hung today. And I think this is very much tied to the idea of the American dream, in particular to one interpretation of it that I'll paraphrase it just from Scott Sandage's wonderful recent book, Born Losers, A History of Failure in America. This is a sense that the dream is less about a successful outcome than it is about the ambition, about the trying. You have to dream the dream, whether in the end you fail or whether you succeed. And this, I think, is a key perspective when you look at something like Florence Foster Jenkins or William Hung.
All right, now Florence Foster Jenkins was this rich socialite who sort of bought her way onto the stage of concert halls like Carnegie Hall, singing opera. And even though by any standards she was not a singer, or at least not a good singer, people would come and maybe they would laugh, but then at the end of the night they would applaud. So I guess the suggestion here, Catherine, is that failure and success are not, you know, polar opposites, but rather points on a continuum.
That's
there's
right.
There's a spectrum in between.
Yeah.
All right. Tell us a little bit about the case of the modern-day Florence Foster Jenkins, the man known as William Hung.
Well, there are a lot of parallels in the two situations, but some differences as well. William Hung, his audition for American Idol aired in January 2004, which was early in the third season of American Idol. He sang Ricky Martin's song, She Bangs. That's from a 2000 album. And the judges pretty much just laughed. And he responded to them, "I already gave my best. I have no regrets at all." And actually, a music critic at the Washington City paper, Glenn Dixon, has said of this comment, "I already gave my best, I have no regrets at all," that it makes William Hung kind of the Nathan Hale of American Idol, and I really like that analogy. And just after this episode aired, there was a website that appeared online. I believe it was created by a man named Don Chin, just a fan. And then there was an online petition asking American Idol producers to have William Hung on the show in Hollywood. And they did this. They invited him for a special show in March 2004 that was called, Untalented, Uncensored, and Uncut, where they invited back favorite rejected auditions. And from there, he was just on this amazing trajectory to stardom. He's just finished recording his fourth album for Koch, which is not a label affiliated with American Idol. His first album debuted in the Billboard Top 40. He's made a music video, a DVD. He's been in commercials and television programs, in a movie. And to top it all off, I saw him perform last weekend in Castroville, California, at the Artichoke Festival, where he was crowned Artichoke King. Now, this might not sound impressive at first hearing, but he shares that honor with Marilyn Monroe, who was crowned Artichoke Queen in 1947, so he's in good company.
All right. Way to go, William Hung.
Yes.
Let's hear a little bit of his infamous audition, attempting to do Ricky Martin's song She Bangs from his 2004 audition on American Idol.
Talk to me, tell me your name, I'm just a link in your daisy chain, your rap sounds like a diamond.
All right, well, there is William Hung, perhaps the most famous of the rejected auditioners for American Idol. We're talking about the national obsession with this TV program. With Robert Thompson at Syracuse University's Center for the Study of Popular Television, and with Catherine Meisel, who's a PhD candidate in ethnomusicology at UCSB, University of California, Santa Barbara. Catherine, you write in this paper that you did at Experience Music Project recently that there's a tension between William Hung's sort of authenticity against the artifice that is American Idol. How much self-awareness do you ascribe to this guy? Did he really know what he was doing?
I think that he does now. I think that he auditioned just kind of as a lark. He had won a karaoke competition at his dorm at UC Berkeley, and he was just encouraged to go ahead and do this audition, and he didn't know anything like this was going to happen of it. And he kind of takes it all in stride, it seems to me, when I did have a chance to interview him, and he just seems to be pretty calm about the whole thing and pretty pleased, and he's just making the most of it.
All right. Bob, you said one of the brilliant things about this show, American Idol, is the way it takes the tradition of the talent competition and then adds this kind of, additional little frisson of something that they got from the Gong Show. I guess William Hung is now famous for being bad.
Yeah, and again, not the first. There was a duo called the Cherry Sisters back in the 19th century, who ended up having a career as headliners for just being really bad as well. But it's true. American Idol is really two different shows. It's the auditions that get us up to the top 48 or so. And that really is just all about this delicious attack of these people who have grown up in the this age of entitlement, where they think someone owes them a career as a rock star, and they don't necessarily think they actually have to do any work or be in a garage band or anything like that. And that part of it produced the likes of William Hung. Then the whole thing turns around when you get to the top 12, where it becomes a much more old-fashioned. I swear sometimes I feel like I'm watching a Judy Garland, Mickey Rooney movie of about these guys putting on a show, and they weep when they get voted off and everything. It really is a very bipolar series, but the two of the things work so well together. We're kind of led in by this kind of freak show that we see in the beginning, sometimes at the expense of some very vulnerable people, I might add. And then once we get there, we end up looking at something that we would have could very easily have seen in the 1950s, in the 1850s, for that matter.
But it seems that one of the big differences now is this alleged democracy in action kind of thing, where suddenly, for really the first time in a way that you couldn't have done on Arthur Godfrey's show or Major Bowles' Amateur Hour, the audience making the call.
Actually, Major Bowes' Amateur Hour, 1930, had a call-in element, believe it or not. Audiences could vote by one of two ways, postcards or a special exchange that had been set up in New York City for a call-in. And whoever got the most votes got to come back, and if you went back three times, you got to be in in the finals. Pat Boone, in fact, in the TV version of it, was created that way. So even that element, ironically enough, in this age of fancy interactive TV, the most successful interactive program, American Idol with its votes, is using something that has been around for 75 years.
All right. Before we go to a break and start taking our listeners' calls, Bob, I want to come back to something that you just very briefly alluded to a few minutes ago. We're calling this American Idol. It's an American obsession, but it's originally a British show.
That's correct. It was called Pop Idol. I believe they did it in Australia even before that. And Pop Idol was done by Simon Cowell, not to become a big star. He wanted to come up with a way to both find new talent and promote them simultaneously, which was really a clever thing to do. He kind of reluctantly came to the American version, and of course, in doing so, became an international superstar in his own right.
Mm-hmm. So is there something particularly American about American Idol as opposed to its Pop Idol predecessor?
Well, I think the story of rags to riches, the story of one minute nobody knows who you are, the next minute everyone knows your name, is a story that's can work in any human context. I think it went to the extent that it did in this country because if you had to sum up the history of this nation from the very beginning, I think you could do it in one word, which is reinvention. We abandoned the old world for the new, improved world. And if things didn't work out there, we always had, go west, young man, manifest destiny. In an odd sort of way, the whole history of this nation has been one big makeover show, and American Idol very nicely falls into that that national tradition.
All right. Catherine Mizell, it strikes me that using the word reinvention in no way contradicts the word that you used before, which is ambition, as kind of a defining characteristic.
Yes, yes. And I actually I wanted to add something to what Professor Thompson just said, that in fact, Simon Cowell and Simon Fuller, Simon Cowell has said this recently in an interview with Larry King, that that he and Simon Fuller brought the idea of idols to the U.S. first as a way to, they were trying to sell it as the American dream. And it wasn't taken up by any network here, and that's why they went back to the U.K. and produced Pop Idol. And once it was a hit in the U.K., they were able to bring it back here. And it's kind of ironic that the American dream had to be a hit in the U.K.
Right. Okay, well, so it is back here, though, and not just a hit, but as we're saying today, a kind of a national obsession. Will continue our discussion on the phenomenon that is American Idol, and later in the show, a live performance from an Americana idol. Bluegrass musician Del McCoury and his band will be along. And we'll be opening the phones to take your calls on American Idol in a moment. Our number is 212-264-7483. 212-264-7483. What do you think of all this? We'll continue our discussion in a moment. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. That's Bucky from the current season of American Idol. He's not one of the two finalists tonight, but recorded or did this version of Stevie Wonder's Superstition on the show. We are talking about the phenomenon that is American Idol. They conclude their fifth season tonight, atop the ratings again. My guests are Robert Thompson, the director of Syracuse University's Center for the Study of Popular Television, and Catherine Mizell, who's a PhD candidate in ethnomusicology at the University of California, Santa Barbara, working on her dissertation called America Singing, The Mediation of Identity Politics in American Idol. Catherine, I just have to ask you really quickly, you're a PhD candidate in ethnomusicology, which we usually think of as, you know, trekking through the bush with a, you know, portable tape recorder in your hand. Can you do ethnomusicology when you're talking about, you know, the single biggest kind of cultural phenomenon in the United States?
You can, and there's actually a standard way that we are supposed to describe ethnomusicology when asked, and that is that it's the study of music in social context. So you can actually kind of apply that in any situation.
All right.
It's more of an approach these days. It is a discipline as well, but there are specific approaches.
But the idea of taking music in its social context, that's a really good point. And Bob, let's talk about the music on American Idol in its context, which is television. Why is this medium so effective in the way this show is presented?
Well, you know, on one level, you would have thought the last thing in the world you could do a show that would appeal across the board would be a music show. We know the variety show, the musical variety show, died in the 1960s for the most part, namely because you couldn't get everybody to agree. One act would be loved by part of the audience, the next act would be hated. Music is arguably the most fragmented of all cultural forms in this country today. So there's a certain paradox to the fact that this appeal to everybody kind of program is about music, when in fact there's a good portion of the audience, myself included, for whom the music of this show is by no means the reason they tune in. I think the reason it works on television is TV is an audiovisual medium. You can get these great close-ups. Music can be presented on TV. And the way you keep from turning off people who don't care for these kinds of pop covers and that kind of thing is you keep the performances down to less than 2 minutes. They're only a very small portion of a whole bunch of other things that are going on.
All right. If you are part of the phenomenon, if you're one of those folks who obsesses about the people on American Idol, whether it's the judges or the contestants, you can give us a call, 212-264-7483. And if you feel like you're on the outside looking in, I'd be curious to hear why. 212-264-7483. Like it or hate it, it is a national phenomenon. And let's go to our first call. Jared in Marlboro, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hi, how are you, John?
Okay, what do you think, good or bad?
I would say that it is bad.
Why?
I am definitely on the outside looking in. I think someone that's educated and, I have a social science degree, a master's degree, and often am interested in the sociological aspects of our culture. And I think it's more of a reflection of the celebrity obsession that our society and culture has developed into. I think everybody is looking for their 15 minutes of fame, and there's people that are famous just for being famous. I mean, there's the Paris Hiltons of the world, mm-hmm. and I think that, it's kind of shocking to me when I hear people just being totally obsessed over it. And I think for the most part, the people who are on the show are not that talented, to be quite honest with you, and someone who's also a music lover.
Yeah.
I just think that, if you look at the winners of American Idol, most of them have not gone on to much commercial success after.
They have had some. Bob, I want to come back. Jared, I want to come back to something that you just said and throw it out to Bob and to Catherine, which is the idea that, yeah, maybe the people on the show are not that good musically, but Bob, it sounds like what you're saying is that's maybe not the real point here.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. American Idol has not produced a Sinatra, as some other shows are. Nobody on there has been good as Bing Crosby. There's no question about that. But then again, we've got a lot of musical stars, Britney Spears, Madonna, who most people would agree are not the greatest vocalists that ever lived, but who created an act or had an act created in conjunction with themselves. And no, I think if we were judging American Idol in terms of simply the criteria of the quality of the music that's on it, it's getting way too much attention. But it's about a whole lot more than that, including, as he points out, this celebrity obsession. This is a very clever way to both promote an act and create an act and a celebrity all in one fell swoop. It's a commercial for the very people that are on it. As far as not having commercial success, actually, they've had a lot of commercial success. Kelly Clarkson had a platinum record. She's won Grammy Awards. Carrie Underwood just won a couple of awards last night. Compared to any other reality show on, the percentage of success on this show is phenomenal.
Yeah. Catherine, what does American Idol, what did the finalists, the choices of finalists over the years tell us about the state of American singing? Do you agree with Bob? Is it really about the personalities as they come across on the medium of television as opposed to the actual ability to hit a pitch and sustain a note and all that kind of stuff?
Well, yes and no. I think yes, in that the producers are explicit about looking for personalities. When you go to the auditions, they tell the crowd this. They say, we're looking for good voices, we're looking for good personalities. But I do think that singing is important, and some of it has to do with the music that's chosen on the show, which very much showcases the voice in ways that Britney Spears, the music that Britney Spears sings, doesn't really showcase her voice. I actually think she has a voice, but she doesn't have to really use it in the way that American Idol contestants have to use it.
Yeah. There's this this thing that musicologists use, this word melisma, where, instead of just singing one note for a syllable, you throw in three or four extra ones. I guess that seems to be a lot of what we're hearing from the singers on American Idol. And a good example is American Idol champion Kelly Clarkson.
So I'm thankful.
why just sing one note on a syllable when you can sing three or four? So that's Kelly Clarkson's Thankful, and certainly she must be thankful for the boost she got from American Idol. A couple of interesting emails. Here's one from Susan in Chatham, New Jersey. I'm a professional opera singer who paid all my dues over the years, knocked my head against the wall trying to get ahead of steam in my career. It's a pathetic statement that people who have no idea what it takes to be a singer and performer, pop or classical, aspire to achieve instant fame and a big career, and there's a vehicle to pander to them. But we also have an email here from Chris, who notes that the Arab world has two shows that closely mirror the Idol format. They're called Superstar and Star Academy. He writes, both shows have Lebanese roots, but star singers from all over the Arab world, and is a huge hit. It's also the closest most Arabs get to making a democratic decision. Interesting. All right, so we're speaking with Robert Thompson from Syracuse University's Center for the Study of Popular Television, Catherine Mizell at the University of California, Santa Barbara, where she's a PhD candidate in ethnomusicology, and speaking with Don on the phone with us from Westbury. Don, are you an American Idol fan or no?
No, I'm not an American Idol fan. I'm another person on the outside looking in. And my only comment, because I don't really completely understand the phenomenon, but my major comment is I find Simon Cowell, even when I've seen him on Leno, to be seemingly a very mean-spirited person who really has very little to say positively about most people on the show. And also, it seems to be, I don't know, you can comment on this, whether it's mm-hmm. a setup that, you know, if these are supposed to be the best people out of thousands and thousands of people, how could there be people who are so horrible so that he can make all those comments? But why is this guy so popular being so mean-spirited?
Well, I think, Bob, I'll ask for your opinion on this, but it seems to me that he's popular simply because that kind of mean-spiritedness is a necessary counterweight to the other two judges who seem to be sort of indiscriminate in liking everything they hear.
Yeah, I mean, Simon Cowell, that's his act, and that's what launched this show. I mean, this show was guaranteed to be a hit before the first episode played, because as the promos played, they were all Simon making really nasty comments, and let's face it, it doesn't appeal to the most noble part of the human spirit, but those episodes, I have to admit, are really fun to watch. You know, this ties into the other the email about the opera singer being upset that you know, she worked hard and these people can just come in and get this. I think some of Simon's mean-spiritedness, at least in the beginning, is kind of a counterbalance. He's constantly telling these people to you know, what makes you think you can come in here and you know, become a star? You've done none of the work that it takes to get there. You don't know how to sing. You can't carry a tune. Go learn how to sing and perform, and then maybe come back and see us. There's a sense in which I think that does provide something of a counterweight. And to this day, even though American Idol has now allowed four people to become big stars and a few other to become minor stars, if you want a career in singing, the best bet is not to wait to get on American Idol, but to learn how to sing, and to learn how to sing better than anybody else around you.
All right. Bob, Catherine, the question everyone wants answered. Who do you think's going to win tonight? Catherine?
Well, you know, a lot of people are saying that Taylor Hicks has it wrapped up, and that's definitely a possibility, but I do remember that a couple of seasons ago, Clay Aiken was ahead the entire season until the very final episode, when he was made the runner-up instead and Ruben Studdard won. So anything can happen.
All right. A very fine non-answer there, Catherine. You have
Thank
a
you.
Good career in politics ahead of you. Bob, what do you think?
I will not argue with someone writing a PhD in ethnomusicology. I agree with every word she said.
All right. Thanks very much, Robert Thompson, Catherine Mizell, and everybody who called and emailed. We've been talking about American Idol, and up next, a real idol of American music, Bluegrass's own Del McCoy. He performs live in studio, Del McCoy, with his band. He's played alongside the legendary Bill Monroe, recently won a Grammy Award for Best Bluegrass Album, and he'll join me here in our Soundcheck studio in just a moment. And I don't need no care at all. You're standing in line just to hit a new low. You fake and a smile with the coffee to go. And tell me your life's been way off a line. Your father took pieces, seven.